Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast for an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor, and that's Condor with a K. And I'm joined by my regular co-host,
Daniel Wilcox. Hi guys.
How's it going, man? Are you all right?
Not bad, buddy. How are you?
Yes, very good. What are you working on right this second?
Right this second, I'm working on the Story Studio podcast and just, you know, having a chat with my good buddy Luke.
I'm doing that as
no,
well.
I... well, yeah. It's getting so better. Yeah. So at the minute, I am working on the short story that we're accompanying with our launch of Lazarus, which we finally got a date booked in. We're getting all that ready to go. We're looking at the launch plan, which is all very exciting.
Arc readers as well, they've got the book now.
It's in the hands of, I think, about 30 to 40 people, which is quite cool to get some feedback. But yeah, it's cool because it's just over a year ago now, isn't it, that we actually put the idea of writing a book to each
books.
Together
yeah.
And rolling ahead with that. And this is kind of the second half of that alongside They Rot and They Remain, which is
been
really, really
an
exciting.
Interesting experiment. It's been very interesting to see how it's all come about. And
has it gone... In your mind, has it gone how you thought it would?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I did kind of think Lazarus would be like a series book, but I mean, and it still might be, but it doesn't have to be now. But I feel like I've developed as a writer so much. It's unbelievable. Mm. Like, just the fact that, like, so I'm currently writing the third Rot book, and... Like there's this bits where as you're writing you can feel that self doubt sort of catching up with you, and like now I know this is my first draft I've done of a new novel, and it's always in the first draft when you're sort of writing, and if you slow down and start reading too much and start thinking too much about what you're doing, that's the point at which you start to like come to a dead stop and like this is terrible. what am I doing? I understand. I think I'm more comfortable with the rhythm of a novel writing process.
The process.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think accountability has been a huge thing as well, because I think if I was doing it solo, I probably would have, you know, cracked on and got books done, but it wouldn't have been sort of with the pace that we've got now. And I think in general, the whole momentum started quite slowly, but it's definitely seems to have picked up now. And I mean, we're looking at our third novel release of this year with potentially a few more by the end of the year, so...
Yeah. Again, it's so it does seem like a lot's coming out now. But I think if you think about like last year, the first sort of 6 months to 8 months was a lot of planting seeds and like just use the farming sort of analogy. You spend a lot of time growing the crops, and then now it seems like we're harvesting a lot.
Yeah. So I'm writing the giveaway short story for all of our mailing lists for Lazarus, which I'm quite enjoying actually because. It's been a while since I've actually written a short story outside of the other stories where it's a bit more free because the other stories, we have our 2000 word limit and we write the story to the theme and, you know, there's kind of a general shape to those.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like I'm having a bit more of a, I don't know, just putting a bit more creativity into it, having a bit more fun, just playing around with it.
Yeah.
And just playing a bit more with the world of Lazarus in a different angle, which is always quite nice.
Yeah.
How about you?
Like I said, the third Rot book, that's pretty much just taking up my entire sort of consciousness at the minute. But yeah, so people might have noticed that the format's a little bit different. We are going to interview our guests, but we thought we'd do this sort of stuff first because we do it every week anyway, and we feel like we're wasting our guest time a little bit. And then we'll go into the guest segment next. So, yeah.
So what's your big whoop?
Oh, yeah. So the big whoop. So for the past couple of weeks or something, I've had this thing on me about wanting to make a film. Because I used to make films. That's pretty much what got me into writing in general. And I've not made anything for like 18 months. And then I put a tweet out to say, hey, would any directors or producers be interested in working on a film based on the other stories, like an episode or anything like that? And I got a lot of people interested, like good directors, people who are making stuff for TV and winning awards all over the world and stuff. So I think my big whoop is just, if I did that 5 years ago, no one would care. So it's good to see that sort of, now we've sort of built up that kind of goodwill, that clout that we can just put a tweet out and sort of get interested and get something made. So, you know, no guarantees, but something might happen at some point.
Yeah, it's just really exciting. It just sounds like, I don't know, it's because we've been talking a lot about crossing media and using sort of the stuff that we've been creating and harnessing that in different ways, using different media, different sort of translations into genres and stuff. And I think it's just a good way to go. And I think it's a good lesson for people listening, maybe. If you've got a short story, if you've got a novel out there, that it doesn't have to just sit on the shelf by itself, but even if it's down the traditional routes of audiobooks or if, like us, you want to turn them into something else like film and that. But yeah, it's kind of exciting to hear that people are coming back and having a bit of a think about, or at least considering the idea of making it happen.
Well, I have some meetings booked now with people to talk about it. So again, no guarantees, but you know, it would be,
it's that kind
awesome
of industry, isn't it? It's just getting the ball rolling first. And even you can make a film and then it can never air.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. I think right now it's just putting the intentions out and then seeing what comes back. But yeah, what's your big whoop?
My big whoop comes a little bit back to the Lazarus short that I'm writing at the minute, which is just short stories in general. Because it's one of those things that I seem to have forgotten about a bit because the last year has been a lot of concentration on novels themselves. The short stories can actually be incredibly rewarding and you can do so much with them. So the reason I got into writing, and I'm sure I've mentioned this before, was a collection of Stephen King short stories called Everything's Eventual. And I remember not having read short stories before and just being blown away by how different each one was, how they still pulled you in, even though it's just short snippets. And I recently got round to reading The Dog Eaters by Nick Cole, who's a previous guest on the show, which is set within his Wastelands universe. And again, it's only about, I think it's no more than 10,000 words, so it's quite a quick read, but it's so poetic and it's so just beautifully describing a post-apocalyptic landscape, and not a lot happens. It's got that feel of The Road to it, but with a bit more poeticism, which is nice. It's short stories and just putting you, if you ever need sort of a creative, because I've been in a bit of a creative funk, and looking at short stories and just sort of injecting a bit of creativity out there is always a good way to go and get out of that.
I love short stories. I think I prefer it, like I think I told Kat once, like if I was unable to do anything else, I think I would still write short stories. Like that would be the thing, that because you can just experiment, and it's like an artist's sketchbook, and it could be like 200 words or it could be 10,000 words. You can do literally whatever you want with them. So yeah, I love short stories.
Yeah, one that has stuck with me very recently, I've just started reading Stephen King's Night Shift.
Oh, it's so good. I love that.
I believe the story is called The Midnight Surf.
That's the what's it called?
That's set in the world they stand.
I haven't read the stand, but I have read that afterwards. Yeah.
But I expect a lot of gore and a lot of action from Stephen King. Maybe not all the time. Some of his stuff is more psychological, but that story itself is just fun and just beautiful and just dark and depressing at the same time. And there's not a lot to it, but it just stuck with me. It's just, if you ever need to just step in and out and try a different style or just look at something different, it's just a good way to go.
That book's great because it's got some of those more poetic, lovely stories, but then it's also got like fun,
some weird ones.
Crazy, yeah. Oh, the Lawnmower Man, which apparently the film was based on, which it isn't. Like, I don't know if you've seen the Lawnmower Man film, but read the short story. It's like a fever dream.
Yeah.
It's so weird. But I love that kind of thing. That's one of my favourite books I think I've read this year, and probably one of my favourite books ever now.
Wow, big statement.
Yeah.
Read it, folks.
Yeah. Okay, so let's... I think we're about ready. So I think we're all warmed up, lubricated mentally. Should we crack on with the interview?
Over to Jay.
They say you should never judge a book by its cover, but if I'm not mistaken, that's exactly what a book cover is for. So how does an author create a book cover that acts as a window to the world, to the story you've told in your book? Well, I mean, you could get a kick-ass book designer like today's guest, J. Caleb Clark of J. Caleb Design. How's it going, man?
Hey, man. How y'all doing?
So do you want to tell us what are you currently geeking out about?
In terms of book cover design, it's going to be fantasy.
Anything. So like
anything.
Anything in
outside
the world.
Of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the movie trailers that were released this past week from the Comic Con.
Yeah.
You know the
yes.
The new Thor trailer, the Ready Player One trailer, all those movies that are coming out here in the next year. So I'm pretty pumped about.
I'm still kind of I really want to see the Infinity War trailer. I saw a bit of a leak, and I was like, just. Wait, don't watch that yet.
That's it. I've got to watch Civil War with the Captain America, and then I want to watch the trailer. Then I don't want to get anything spoiled, so I'm trying to avoid it as best as I can.
Yeah. I found it the most bizarre spoiler as well, because I had a friend tag me into it, and it was basically the really shaky cam footage that someone had caught inside of like 3/4 of the screen at an angle. But then beneath it, someone had written, like, step by step what happens in the trailer. And I was like, I've never seen that before where that's the first bit of information. And I've ignored it for now. I want to see it in high quality, but it's exciting. What's been your favorite trailer to come out of it then?
Blade Runner has been the movie that I'm the most excited for. I really like the dark, gritty sci-fi, cyberpunk kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. Are you a big fan of the
October
original?
This year? Yes, very much so.
Cool. Okay, man. So, I mean, do you want to give our listeners like a little bit of a flavor of who you are, what you do, where you come from, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. I'm on the East Coast of the U.S., and I've been doing book covers for about 5 or 6 years, and that's that business has kind of went from having 4 or 5 covers a year to where I'll probably close to be 150 at the end of this year. And so I'm actually in the process right now of quitting my daytime job to be a full-time freelance artist who just focuses on book cover design.
Wow, congrats.
That's cool. That's very cool.
I've got 2 3-year-old daughters and a beautiful wife. And, you know, we live out here in the country. Pretty much you can't see any neighbors where I live.
Yeah.
There's nobody around us. You can hear them sometimes when they're shooting their guns and stuff in their backyard, but other than that, you know, there's no contact. It's kind of quiet and remote, and that's pretty much it. So
that sounds ideal for like just sort of getting into your work and losing yourself in the cover. How long does it normally take you to do one cover?
It depends on the direction I go. Usually anywhere from or a little as 3 hours to 10, 15, 16 hours. Something like that, just depending on what's going on and what I've got to put into it and all the moving pieces to it.
And is this something is this something you wanted to do, like, you know, when you first started design, or is like there's another aspect you were initially interested in?
Really, I started when I was in high school drawing comic figures and that kind of stuff. And I always loved fantasy. The only thing I could think of to make money as an artist was graphic design. So I went into that in college. And about my sophomore year of college, I saw a book cover at a Barnes & Noble bookstore, and I was like, I want to buy this cover, buy this book because of the art. And that really got my wheels to turning about book cover design. And I told the girl I was dating at the time that I wanted to do that. And then I just kind of dropped it, and I graduated college and went into a small print shop where I've worked for about 10 years. And I didn't pick up any book covers or pursue it for 5 years, and then I just kind of fell into it about 5 or 6 years ago, and it kind of just sprawled out from there to where I'm at now. So.
Yeah. See, I find it really interesting because you've even said it then. One of the points that I wanted to come on was about how everyone says you should never judge a book by its cover, no matter from like how young you are, never judge a book by its cover. But obviously that's something that is absolute bullshit, because if you don't have a good cover, people aren't going to pick up your book. And you said it yourself then, you picked up this book because its cover was beautiful. But how do you feel, how important do you feel in general a cover is to the book, and how can a style apply to a genre and really grab the right reader?
It's kind of a funny thing, because you know, depending on the genre, you can get away with certain things, and you can do different things within each genre. But really, you, at the basis of it, you need a solid cover. A good book cover might not sell your book, but a bad cover will turn off people from buying your book. If it looks, you know, there, in my mind, there's a bar that probably changes from cover to cover, genre to genre. There's a bar that once you pass that bar in cover design, you can pretty much, your book's going to sell. It's going to look okay. It's going to get by, that kind of stuff. The better the looking it is, the more chances it's going to be picked up. But, you know, there's a level of where people are going to see it and go, that looks amateur. And they're going to just click right by it, because we're visual people. I mean, on Facebook, you know, you scroll down on your phone real fast and images catch your eye, and you'll scroll back and stop at it. And we do the same thing, you know, on Amazon or wherever we are looking for books, unless we've been told to go check out this one certain book, and we're going to bypass the cover anyway. Yeah, but if you're just browsing, you know, we're visual people. So we're going to automatically just disregard covers left and right. Just even if people say they don't do it, but they do it, you know?
Yeah. When if I go to a book and the cover is, let's say not reaching the bar, I just won't read it. I just can't. If there's not that much effort, or if it's not so much an effort thing, I think it's like a taste. If that taste level hasn't been reached, I just can't. I'm there's so many good books out there with good book covers that I just always automatically go to those.
But, yeah.
So I mean, where are your big inspirations coming from? Where do you look at other books in the genre and sort of base your designs on those, or are you sketching your own initial ideas and trying to make them fit the genre? How does that side of it work?
Again, it's kind of the case by case, and depending on where the author wants to go with it. One of the things I always talk about is there's two types of book covers you can go with. You can either go with a cover that fits your genre, that looks like all the other covers in your genre, that, you know, that'll just, you know, immediately tell a reader what they're about to get into, or you can pick a cover that's going to go against the grain of your genre, that will, you know, possibly let your cover stand out, but could possibly let people skip over it because they don't understand, you know, that cover relates to, you know, your genre, you know. So that's my two lines of thought. So it's really a case by case basis. I deal with a lot of self-published authors, and they usually want a cover that's going to be within their genre. And so from there, I just try to make it, I try to make it stand out in some form or fashion. I really try to key on, you know, dynamic shots or,
you put,
you know,
like
unique
a pixel sized thing of your face just in there, just to get like a little bit of a little bit of your originality in there.
My dad tells me to do that all the time. Like every cover I do, he's like, "You're in there somewhere, right? You've got your name hidden in that cover somewhere, right?"
Yeah,
it's all subliminal because you do have a very distinct style. I was saying to Luke, I mean, I came across you. It was on the 20 Books of 50K Facebook group, wasn't it? That you keep popping up and posting your website. And when I first went on there, you've got a very distinct style. Like no two of your book covers look alike, but they all look like they fit one person, which is obviously you. How long did it take to develop sort of a style to have your own angle to book covers?
It's kind of hard to explain, I guess, or it's hard for me to think about it, because for me it's been a gradual thing from, you know, my initial covers to where I'm at now. But when I first started doing book covers, I did places like, you know, the crowdsourcing websites and 99 Designs and that kind of stuff, you know, which I see now the detrimental effect they have with the design community. So I don't fool with them anymore. But there it was, you know, it was competition. And so you had to make your cover stand out. It had to have some sort of hook or some sort of, it had to be a step above everybody else. So you're always kind of pushing yourself. And you know, I think even though I don't go to those sites anymore, I think that they it helped mold me and shape me and give me a different angle than I originally started with. And I think that's carried on, you know, 4 years after I've quit, you know, being at those sites. And so I'd really just always try to push it to a limit where the author has something nobody else has. Yeah. Even if it's going to be one that sticks with the genre, you know, you've got a cover that doesn't look like it's just a regular, where you could take that title off and put another title in it, and it would fit with another author's work. That's, you know, try to stay away from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but, I think as authors, like, I hope that we do that in the story as well. Like, I know we write to a genre and we sort of try and hit certain tropes, but I'd hate to think that it was interchangeable. Like, we are trying to stay
like Mad Libs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's right. I'm reading the book Purple Cow. I can't remember the name of the author.
Seth Godin.
Yeah, same principle. You know, you're in a field full of brown cows and you want to be that purple cow. And so for me, making my book covers for my authors, you know, I want to make sure that they stand out from the rest of their competition, because if they're successful, I'll be successful on the back end of it, you know? So that's my self-motivation behind every cover. So
For those listeners out there, I'd recommend any Seth Godin book. They're all pretty amazing. But the purple cow one is, if you go past a field and there's a purple cow, you're going to tell your friends that you saw a purple cow, and it's like you want to stand out in a way. But I mean, go on, sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, no, you're fine. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so you said you were talking about lessons learned from when you first started. What would you tell yourself who's about to do their first cover or about to get in this business? What lessons would you give to them?
The first thing I would tell myself is that, yes, it's possible for you to take this little idea you have and turn it into a business that will sustain yourself. My second thing would be exposure, exposing yourself, you know, and I think it probably parallels being a writer, exposing yourselves to other artists, other media, other any type of creative thing you can expose yourself to, that can only help you do better as a writer or as me as a cover artist. I mean, watching the opening credits for movies, I've gotten inspired from that before, you know, just by how they're handled, and I think, oh man, I could do that. You know, I could take that and do this with it on a book cover, you know, and that kind of stuff. I mean, just exposing myself to all types of art and building my resource library. At first, when I first started book covers, man, I didn't want to spend money on buying any type of graphics or buying any type of photography. I always tried to find the free stuff and do it as cheap as possible. and in my early work, it shows. You know, you can see where I can see where my covers weren't as strong as they are now. But now that I've invested into my business and invested into all that I do, I have quite a library of all types of graphics, images, and effects, and you know, you name it, I've probably got it on my server. So
it seems as sort of two approaches to a lot of the creative arts, which is, one, you either somehow have the financial backing, you just jump straight in and do it and just take that risk, or two, like you sound like you did yourself and like me and Luke are doing at the minute, is just build that up gradually. I mean, at any point, do you regret not jumping into it now that you've seen how successful you have been in your book covers, or would you sort of always recommend that gradual scope into it for people?
For me, it's been best to do it like this. It's not been good for my sleeping hours, because I work a full-time job. I come home, I got my family, and at 10 o'clock at night, I go to work, and I work from about 10 to 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's about every night. And it's been like that way for about 2 years now, or about a year and a half. And so, that part has sucked, but you know, a year and a half ago, I don't think I was ready mentally or physically or I guess even emotionally to step out and take the plunge, because I'm a cautious person. You know, I've got my family to worry about. I worry about them, you know, not being supported by me. And my wife works, you know, and she works. She does better than I do, and she's self-employed herself. But I never wanted to be a burden. So for me, it had to be a gradual process. I couldn't rip it off like the Band-Aid. And so I wish I would have done it 2 or 3 months ago, but you know, I'm here now at the point where I'm like, I've got 2 or 3 more days left of my job. And I'll be free. So
that's gotta be exciting. Cool. So how do you feel your life changing from sort of, like you say, where you have been at for the last 2 years into going full time now? Do you see sort of a dramatic impact on the hours that you use? Are you sort of scared that it might be such a big change that, I don't know, it's difficult to get into that pattern, because everyone seems to approach going into full time differently? Have you got any sort of, how are you feeling about the whole transition?
I'm excited and I'm a little terrified, again, because I just, you know, I worry about the money. I worry about the book covers, you know, keeping it coming in is my biggest thing. And I'm booked up for a couple months in advance already. So I know what I've got coming. So I know I'm okay. I'll survive at least to the end of the year probably. But I do worry that, you know, all of a sudden one day nobody will just hire me again and that'll be it. And I'll have to go try and find a job back in the normal work environments.
But even if that happens, like you're not any worse than you were before. Do you know what I mean? Like you'd still sort of move forward in a way.
Yeah, that's right. And my biggest motivation, really has been, my kids. You know, I hope that when they get up, they grow up, they do whatever they want to pursue, whatever dream they want to. But I want to be able to look at them as a father and say, you know, I pursued my dream. I took a chance. I tried it. Even though I might fall on my face, you know, I tried it. And that's the biggest part of it all.
That all works well until they say, I want to be Batman. And he's like, okay, you have to fund your Batmobile or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, man.
So you're going to be going into the full-time cover designer business soon. What is your ideal working day going to look like now? Because you're going to have so much more free time to do more covers and whatever else. What's that going to look like for you?
Right now, it's you know, I was worried that I wouldn't be disciplined enough to get up. Because I've had a few times. I'm doing part-time right now at my full-time job. So I do 2 days a week there and 3 days a week at home. And so I was worried that, you know, the lazy man in me would be like, oh, I'll just sleep till 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning and then I'll get to work.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've done really well. I've gotten up, I get my kids ready. My wife leaves a little early. So I get my kids ready. I take them to my mom's house. She's my full-time babysitter. And then I come back and I go back to work. I get to work. You know, I can do probably almost triple the amount of work I could do before, which I could do two or three books. I could do two or three covers a week. Part-time, I'll take that back, maybe two a week. And now I can do probably 6 to 8 a week with me having 40 hours of time to put to it. So 8 to 5 is kind of that's what I've been used to for 10 years.
Yeah.
So I plan on keeping my 8 to 5 hours and hopefully going to bed at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night versus getting up or staying up and working. So
I'm interested, what does the process look like before you like dive into Photoshop or whatever? So do you have like a routine? Do you put music on? Do you make some coffee? How does that look like for you?
I put on Netflix. Okay. I watch sitcoms. Right now I'm going through Cheers. I'm on about season 3. You know, it's about 11 next, and after that I'm going into Frasier because, you know, that's a spinoff show.
Yeah.
I let that play in the background, let those people talk and stuff, and I don't really follow it, but that plays. Sometimes I just have an idea in my head and I'll just go ahead and go straight into Photoshop. Other times I do word bubbles where I just write down concepts or words I think that relate to the book or what me and the author have discussed and try to put concepts and things like that together before I get started.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what are the tools of the cover designer's trade? Like what application are you using, like a graphics tablet and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I've got just a little Wacom tablet that I use for any kind of accurate work I need to get done. I use Photoshop primarily for the final compositing.
Yeah.
I also use some 3D rendering software that I've been working with for about a year or about a half a year now or thereabouts, where I can, you know, where I render out people and that kind of stuff. And the trick there is to make sure they don't look computer generated or you know, real crappy looking. You know, but it's some good software. So a lot of times, you know, especially once you get in Photoshop, you can get some lighting in there and that kind of stuff, and it really doesn't show up much as computer generated work.
So, are any of your designs on your website using that software?
The very first one on my photo based one is called Horns of Ruin.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all. There's no photos used in that. At all.
So if you're listening, you should go to www.jcalebdesign.com and just check out, because I saw a few of these and I was like, I wonder how they made them. Because like,
hiring for your small business, if you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah.
A lot of cover designers I see are like the, you know, they hire a model or something. And I don't think, I always feel like they look a little bit forced, but these ones where, I don't know how you were doing them, but they look amazing. They look very... I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it, but it's a very cool look.
They're fantastic, yeah.
And what's the application there?
The next one over,
is that like
it's called a DAZ, D-A-Z, 3D. Nice. And it's kind of, it's almost like a almost like a stock photo website, but you buy 3D elements that
cool.
you can compile together to make, you know, you can make your figures from there. The very next one, Safe Haven, I think, or it's the second or third one. It's got the zombies on it reaching up. That one also.
Yeah.
Again, that one has the city's in the background. Those two buildings. That's the only photos that were used in it. The rest of it's brushes and just silhouettes mixed in.
Yeah, very, very cool. Yeah.
I'm in awe of artists just in general because I don't. It's just a whole area that I've never understood.
Yeah.
But my next question, I've got kind of two parts to it because it's kind of timely. I had an artist friend contact me the other day, basically talking about getting into book cover design and kind of whether that's an angle that's worth him looking at, because he's got a very I'd kind of fit him in nonfiction slash kid books depending on what he goes for. But my kind of question for this is, number one, how did you find, or how would you describe the genres that your books tend to fit, sort of primarily what they fit? And two, how did you go about finding that genre or fitting within that genre itself?
My main genres are going to be probably fantasy, sci-fi, some thrillers, crime stuff, that kind of thing. I do some nonfiction work, and they're on my website too. Just they're mixed in down there. Finding the work has been mainly word of mouth. I mean, I don't turn a job down. For the most part, I mean, every author that's ever contacted me, if they said yes to working with me, then I said yes to working with them, and I still do that. So I've done romance novels and that kind of stuff, but word of mouth, because a lot of authors, you know, are friends with other authors that are in the same genre. So you know, so and so wrote a fantasy book, and he likes my work, but he recommends it to the next guy down the line. He does fantasy, and you know, and it kind of just kind of trickles on down from there. What was the first part of the question? Like, I think I skipped it.
I don't even know.
What was it? No, so it was, what genre would you say is, say you? I think you answered that one, but then the second one was how do you? I've completely forgotten.
How does someone work
That's
out
it.
How to fit in that genre? Is that right? So like, if I
so based on someone's
write,
art style.
Yeah. How do you absorb that skill? I guess, that style, I guess.
Really, I mean, if his work fits, you know, already the nonfiction or the kids, just taking your friend, for example, if his work fits those genres, doing mock-ups, doing that kind of stuff that, you know, that already makes it look like it's legitimately there for that genre is how you kind of start molding your stuff to fit that, I guess, is what I would, is the way to answer that. I mean, if he doesn't have anybody that he's working with right now or for me, if I wanted to break into romance, I don't have a lot of romance authors. So what I would do is, you know, I know I can probably fit the romance style, or I know I can probably achieve that style. Then I would just go to, you know, Google, type in romance novel imagery. For me, my big thing would be trying to figure out a way to make mine stand out from the other generic romance novels that you see with the bare-chested men or the half-naked ladies or yeah. whatever, you know. I'd be trying, again, like the Purple Cow says, trying to find a way to make my stuff the Purple Cow.
Purple-naked so people. You know,
there you go. You know, what? How can I make mine different but still fit yeah. the genre, you know? Yeah. So, and if he already lends toward those types, you know, it'd be just a matter of just modifying your work, putting typography on it and creating mock-ups or samples that you've done, you know, of work you've done, to show people. So,
okay, dude. So first question, what's your favorite font?
Favorite font? Oh man. It's
I'm just interested. I like you know, a good font, and,
just my favorite what
your take on that would be.
It's probably going to be Uniform. It's probably the one Uniform. It's called, I can't remember the guy who did it, but it's called Uniform. It's a sans serif. It's kind of like Helvetica. You know, it's just a simple,
nice, solid,
beautiful font.
Yeah.
It's got three different weights. One's regular, one's condensed, and one's extra condensed. So it works really well for novels because if I get a long title, you know, I can go ahead and use the extra condensing and kind of fit it all in there if I have to.
Yeah.
Or novel title, I mean. But I mean,
that's my favorite question ever asked on this podcast.
I'm going to ask everyone from now on. Yeah. Dan, what's your favorite font? Do you have a favorite?
Oh, my favorite one. I was actually asked if I was a font the other day, what font would I be? I think I went with Myriad Pro. I'm not sure why. I've just been using that a lot lately for just some serif bits. Quite smart, but it's not too classical. How about you, Luke?
Well, I'm quite
is it Nevis?
I like Nevis because I think it's kind of solid and classic, but is like a little bit different, like I said. But I also like Bebas New, and I've used that a few times.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of them. That's one of our standard ones at work.
Yeah. I think it might be getting overused now, but it is a good font. I'm not too sure.
One thing that surprised me as a graphic designer is as I've grown and I've learned fonts, I've learned to hate certain fonts.
Yeah.
And so when I see them used in real life or used in certain situations or just recognizing fonts in general, like, oh, I know what that font is. But then I see ones that I know that I don't like Bleeding Cowboys. Have you ever heard of that font?
I've seen that one, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I used it for something as well, like years ago. Because when you first start using fonts, it's like, oh, that's interesting. That's cool. But it is overused. Yeah.
And when I first saw it, I was like, that's so awesome. And I used it for like one thing. And then I guess as I grew as a designer or just as my opinion changed, and I'm not saying it's a bad font.
Yeah.
It's just not my style font, you know?
Yeah.
And so I see it and I go, I kind of cringe when I see that font used nowadays.
Yeah. Is it the fact that like when you first get into it, like you're looking for sort of like flamboyant, like cool looking font. And then like as you sort of use more and more of this kind of stuff, you kind of realize they're kind of garish. It's kind of like someone wearing like a pimp suit where they just need like a nice like pinstripe sort of suit. But okay, so the second question, what makes for a bad cover? Like what are the things that you just should not do or should be looking out for if you're going to hire a designer?
Too many concepts on one cover.
Yeah.
I guess that'd be a higher thought.
Bleeding Cowboys font.
Point. Bleeding Cowboys, don't use it.
Yeah.
But just, you know, people try to cram all their whole story onto the cover, you know, because they think, you know, my customer will see it and they'll instantly get it. And that's what, you know, and I'll make my sale that way. But, you know, trying to cram all the things from the book onto one cover, you know, that kind of stuff. Too much imagery. I think, you know, simple concepts, simple imagery, even if it's going to be a complex scene that's happening on the cover, still just a simple clear scene, you know. Know what you're going to focus on. Also competing elements. A lot of times I see authors who have or if they do their own covers or even designers who do it, their title will match the same size as almost their author font and it'll match almost the same size as their imagery, whatever it may be. It'll, you know, there's no hierarchy in it.
Okay.
And again, that's kind of that's not something that a normal author would, I guess, think about as far as it goes.
Yeah.
Clip art, anything like that, I wouldn't go with that.
Stay with
I try to stay away from stock photos for the most part. A lot of the covers I deal in, they're stock photos, but it's stock photos everybody uses because, you know, with fantasy, there's not that many stock photos available that are really good. And so I try to stay away from just slapping a stock photo on a cover and slapping type on it and being done with it. A lot of authors could get away with that and be just fine.
We came across that quite recently when we were looking at putting one of our first books together. Was despite the incredible number of stock photos up online, it just seemed that we picked like a zombie picture for our first book they wrote. And the minute we were like, oh, we posted it up online and said, we're announcing this could potentially be a cover, what do people think? And every comment was this picture used on like a band poster or another book or somewhere else. And I was like, I can't believe how many people literally had that picture.
Suffice
to say, we didn't use it in the end.
If an author's going to do something like that, my best suggestion would be to do a Google image search of it, before you use it, and you can see, if it's been used before and that kind of stuff. Because again, especially if it's a really specific genre, there's not that much out there.
A lot of our listeners are authors, and they sort of want to, get their books out there and that kind of thing. I mean, what should they be looking for in a cover designer, if not like using yourself?
Feel free to plug yourself.
Go for it.
Communication and flexibility are the two main things that I try to stand by as a cover designer. If you email me, I'm gonna try to email you within 12 hours or less, or within 2 or 3 hours. I try to email you back, even if it's just to say, "Hey, I got this. I got it. I'll get back to you in a little bit," or whatever. Just let them know that I'm there. Because I've heard tons of authors who say their cover designer flaked out on them, and they haven't heard back from them, in 2 or 3 days. And sometimes it's just laziness, So I guess if you reach out to a cover designer, how fast they respond. Their flexibility as far as just how they handle, which you wouldn't know this as an author until you got into it with them, but after the first proof or your first initial thoughts and you give them changes, how they respond to changes. Sometimes when I hear changes from an author, I might not agree with them, but I have to take them into consideration because they're the one paying me in the end, and so I want to make the best cover I can for them. So I may have to say, well, the reason I did this is because of this, but still taking criticism. Is big, but you wouldn't know that without actually getting into it with a designer first. But their communication, I think, would probably be the best thing, because if they're fast to reply, they seem friendly in their talk with you. Just kind of getting a feel for them while you in their context of their language back to you, is my biggest flag, because I do that with customers. Like I said, I haven't ever turned down a client. But I could tell some of my potential clients that might be problematic just by how I was talking to them and how they responded back to me with some of the words they use, how they use their language and that kind of stuff. You can see red flags. So I would take that and apply that to your hunt for a cover designer.
Do you have any tricks for new authors that have never worked with a cover designer before? Because one of the big things that we've just had a cover done, and we use 99 Designs and put it out there. When we put the brief out there, we got a lot of ideas come back that I think me and Luke had quite a strong idea of what we were looking for in our head. And none of the designs that came back were what we were looking for, but they were still fantastic. And we've gone with one of them in the end. Yeah. But do you have any advice for people who want to maybe dip their toe into looking for someone to do their cover? But obviously sometimes $100, $200 is quite a lot of money to commit to. Is there a way to kind of dip your feet in the water and find out the best designers around there without having to pay that lump money up front?
I see what you're saying. I mean, because as a first-time author, you want to make sure you get a cover that you like, and you want to make sure it's a cover that's going to sell your book. And you want to get, it's just like anybody else, you want to get the high quality for the best price that you can get it, the best quality, best price, all that kind of stuff. It's about finding that medium. First time authors, definitely ask your author friends if you got them, you know, who they used. You know, I don't know if it'd be, I don't think it would be uncouth to ask an author, you know, how much they paid for it. At least I wouldn't think in it. Cause I mean, you know, it's not like they're, you're asking them anything that's kind of rude or anything, or I wouldn't take it that way. But asking your authors, I mean, a lot of designers have their prices posted already. So you can kind of see what, you know, you might be having to bite off with. Pre-made covers are a decent route to go. Because,
What's your thoughts on pre-mades?
I'm actually about to launch that part of my website, is a pre-made section. Yeah, that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. I like them. I understand, you know, they're always a little bit less expensive. You can kind of see what you're getting ahead of time, and you already know if you're going to like it or not because you're obviously interested in it or you're not interested in it. But, you know, again, the pre-mades run into the whole thing of the person who designed it probably tried to design it as fast as they can to get it up so that, you know, just because they don't know if they're going to sell or not. So, while, you know, some of them don't want to put the time and effort, you know, into it. So, I mean, again, you can search pre-mades. There's tons of people who do them, and some people do them tremendously well. But yeah, the pre-made thing, I think they're a fine way to get into it. I think they're a fine way for a first-time author to kind of get a cover that they might like, and then they can kind of branch out from there. I mean, the 99 Designs things, I saw that on Facebook, you guys mentioned it, and then when I mentioned it earlier in the session, I thought, oh, I think they just used it because I think I saw their poll up. You know, that's not necessarily I got my start there. So, I mean, I owe a lot to 99 Designs, and a lot of the customers that I still use came from 99 Designs. I probably got a handful of them that still use me, you know, that came from that site. The trouble with that is on the designer end, you know, you can put a lot of time and effort into something, and then, you know, it's not a payoff. So, I mean, you know, if you wrote a book and you wouldn't like it if a customer got to read 50 books and then decide which one they want to pay for.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's an exploitative element to it.
There sure is. I mean, but again, I wouldn't necessarily not recommend it for a first-time designer to get into, because again, it's competition. You know, you constantly have work to kind of try. You know, there was always book covers being posted there on that site, and I'm sure it's the same way on other crowdsourcing websites where they probably all offer the same thing. You know, book covers, logos, whatever. So I mean, as you know, for a designer to cut their teeth. Yeah, you know, it's not a bad thing. And I know a lot of designers absolutely can't stand those types of sites. But like I said, I owe a lot to that, especially 99 Designs, because that's the only one I use. Yeah. I owe a lot to that kind of or that format of site, because I may never have gotten into book cover design without my first year or two spending there getting book covers and winning the contest and building up some of my clientele from that. But I mean, the pre-made thing, I think if you didn't want to try the 99 Designs or the sites like that, pre-mades would be a good start, because you can, because there's always some changes you can do. You can say, you know, I want to change the font to this or change the title. There's, you know, so they can get some interaction with the designer and see how they react and how they, you know, just to get their feet wet into it, just to get the experience of it. And it's really not that hard. I mean, you know, you just email somebody, hey, you want to do my cover? And then, you know, go out from there.
And the prices always seem pretty great to me for pre-mades. For the quality of cover you get, rather than sort of doing your own word art, Bleeding Cowboys design, you can always, the pre-mades are like, they always look pretty good to me. I've always been pretty tempted as well.
I did find with, I don't know if this is the same for you, Luke, but now that we have done the 99 Designs, and because Lazarus was a very specific idea, and I'm not sure what kind of genre it was going to fit in or where it was going to look at working. And obviously we were trying to get that on quite a quick turnaround, but I am at a point where I feel like I'm beginning to become more aware of certain cover designers, certain companies. And I do want to start getting some of that custom stuff in there and really roll with it. I don't know. It seems to come off, you get a lot more unique designs and they seem to be a lot better when you actually go straight to source and look at the things, the companies other people are using.
Yeah. Well, you get a lay of the land, don't you? You sort of realize, oh, I like that guy. I really want to use him at some point. You know what I mean? Like, you sort of build up a thing of like a wish list of designers and stuff.
And really, you know, people, you know, they like relationships. So I mean, well, you know, if you branch into that, you know, getting into the specific cover designers, you know, I'm friends with a lot of my my authors that I've been doing work with for 2 or 3 years on Facebook. We chat, we, you know, mention random things to each other and that kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of them, like I said, that you know, I've done work for them. I've talked about their kids. They've sent me photos of their babies and, you know, you know, all kind of stuff. So, I mean, the relationship aspect of it, you know, has been interesting to me to see develop over a period of time. And I can see where, as an author, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know anybody in that field, so I don't know what to do. You know, you can go to Google and just type in, you know, cover designers, and you're going to get stuff popped up. But, you know, you don't, you know, have that, I guess, that initial, it's kind of like a dance when all the girls are on one side, and all the boys are on the other side, you know, getting out there and mingling around. And it's hard to get those first steps going.
So we've not got too many questions left before we go into the fabled quickfire round. So I just want to quickly ask you, when I say successful creative, who comes to mind and why?
Somebody I look up to is Gene Malicki, if I'm saying his last name right. Yeah, and he's a cover designer. So, I mean, you know, he's right in my field or whatever. But he's like the high-end. You know, you see his stuff on Barnes & Noble out and that kind of stuff, you know. And he actually hires models to come in. He has a costume team that's Taylor makes every costume for every cover. You know, there's no telling what he charges. I would love to know.
Yeah.
you know, he's always been an inspiration to me as far as it goes, just seeing his work. And, I mean, and his work really isn't – it's not necessarily – it's just good stuff. I mean, it's custom work. You know, it's custom custom photography and that kind of stuff. Now, I don't want to get into the photography side of it, but just his work has always been, you know, inspiring. Mark E. Cobb is another designer, a cover designer that I really look up to. He does a lot more metaphorical work or for literary type novels and that kind of stuff, you know, so he doesn't do a lot of photos for anything, but just his work is always super smart and super, you know, I guess next level or high level thinking concepts for the cover, you know. So I always appreciate his work, you know.
Okay, so if everything you ever made got burned and became corrupt and you didn't have a proper backup solution in place and it all disappeared except for one image or one cover, which cover would that be and why?
Well, it's actually a cover that hadn't been released yet. It's not coming out till so it's kind of hard for me to tell you to go look for it. It's an image I did of a fantasy woman just in a normal in a armor outfit, and she's just standing over this dead guy, and you know, whether she's slayed him or whatever. And you know, I did that piece about 3 or 4 months ago, and I shared it online with some people and that kind of stuff. I did it actually just as artwork, just for the fun of it. It's the phone, it's the wallpaper to my phone. For me to do it, when I got done with it, I told my wife, I was like, man, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is where I want to go. This was kind of a culmination piece for me, you know, and it's really, really simple. When I finished it, you know, and I think that would be my motivating piece to let me know that I can get back to this point. You know, I can get there, you know, just
the one you pin up on the wall.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. Look into the future. Is it just book covers you're looking at, or do you intend to sort of go into other mediums, other different things?
For the foreseeable future, it's going to be book covers. Like I said, I'm going to branch into the pre-made covers a little bit. I'm probably going to stick more towards specific pre-mades, like fantasy pre-mades and that kind of stuff. So that, you know, 'cause there's not a lot of good fantasy pre-made covers out there, but, you know, I'm going to do that. I want to get into interior design layouts for the inside of books, I know how to do that already. I just haven't ever really, tried it with an actual author or anything like that. Yeah. And I wrote down, I've got a list of ideas I have for my business. And the other day I wrote down book cover trailers. For like, you know, doing the, you know, for videos. Yeah. And I see more and more authors using that kind of stuff. And I would like to might branch into that. But for the most part, if it's going to be book cover related, that's my foreseeable future, book cover related items. So.
Cool.
I'd love to know how effective book cover trailers are, because I keep seeing them pop up, but no one ever shares the results of whether or not they get any sales from them.
I think I think one of the things is that it's a lot cheaper to run Facebook ads for videos than images now, because less people are doing it. So I think that's one of the reasons that people are doing it more and more.
Brandon Sanderson's new novel's coming out, and he had a book cover trailer. It just revealed the cover. That's all it did. There wasn't anything to it other than just, you know, the reveal of the cover. But I thought it was super cool, you know, and I thought, you know, how could I take that and make it mine? How could I let that inspire me?
You should do the Avengers own, Infinity War thing where it's like your TV, your computer screen, but like a dodgy camera, like a fuzzy sort of reveal.
Yeah. And then someone leaked. Someone's
yeah. So my wife leaked the fucking cover.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We got the quick fire round for you, and then I'm going to eat some dinner.
All right.
Okay, cool. Shepherd's pie, if you're interested. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Cool.
Now, what is it? You just ask me random questions and I just answer them? I mean...
Yeah, you've got like 5 seconds to answer each of these questions.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
Nothing too probing. Nothing too scary.
Nothing too probing, yeah. Okay, Dan, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first this time.
Okay.
The Beatles or Slipknot?
Slipknot.
Would you rather live in a world where you're constantly bored or constantly bombarded with entertainment?
Bored.
Your horror or superhero film?
Superhero.
Aquaman or The Submariner?
Submariner.
Nice.
The last book or comic you read?
Last book I read? Shadowless by Stuart Thomann.
The one person you'd want to meet?
Denzel Washington.
What's your biggest hobby outside of design?
I don't know if I have one anymore. I'm playing with my kids.
Okay, beer or whiskey?
Whiskey.
What was the worst birthday present you ever received? I like this question.
That's a tough one, man, because I can't remember hardly any of them.
That has got a few people. That's a stickler, because that's something you have on your, like, on your mind.
Mind, Evan.
Yeah, and this is recorded live, or this is recorded, this is on the record.
Yeah.
I don't want to say something.
Yeah.
I got an origami swan one time, origami swan, and I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I don't see you and think, I bet that guy likes origami swans.
No.
Okay.
One of my favorite gift giving things I've ever heard. Sorry, just cut. Do you want to do the last question first, and then I'll say?
No, it's all right. You go for that.
I know. It was my sister, bless her. She won't listen to the show, but if she does, hi Becky. For Valentine's Day, she once got given a peg that said "I love you" on it. Just a wooden peg said "I love you" on the side.
Wow. In pen. Someone have written it on
just
a pen.
This is like a biro. Here's a wooden
like
that. Peg.
It's like an anti-present. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There you go. Now hang up my laundry.
Yeah. So the last question of the quick fire round, the last question of the show, where can we follow you in your work?
Any social media outlet for the most part. My tag is always going to be J. Caleb Design, all one word. Just J. Caleb Design. Twitter, Facebook. Instagram, internet, jacobdesign.com, Gmail, okay. Cool. jacobdesign@gmail.com. I mean, you know, just you type that in, you're gonna find me. So
I feel like that's deliberate.
Yeah. So we've got to say, you guys should really check out Jay's work. It's really cool. We personally would love to work with him at some point. I think we've got some ideas we'd like to send to you pretty soon if you're interested.
Yes.
Go to the website, check his stuff out. A quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, and listeners for listening, our patrons at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver, and thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, because without you I'd be alone, and thanks again to Jay. Thanks, man.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me on. I really do appreciate
it's been really fun. It's been really fun.
Yeah, I'm honored you guys asked me. Thank you guys so much.
No worries. Alright,
we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.